Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by The Great Courses. Now, I love The Great Courses. It's a great way to learn about a number of different subjects. And now there is a new way to experience The Great Courses, The Great Courses Plus Video Learning Service, which allows you unlimited access to a number of great courses, video lectures in a bunch of great subjects, including the fundamentals of photography filmed in partnership with National Geographic. Now that I have two kids to take pictures of, and since I usually just use a iPhone, now I can actually know how to work the nice DSLR camera that I have using the Great Courses video lecture series. And with the Great Courses Plus, you could watch fundamentals of photography from start to finish or select other lectures that you want to focus on, including the episode 10 of Fundamentals of Photography, which is all about how to improve the composition of your photos. So The Great Courses Plus has a really great offer for you. You could watch the Fundamentals of Photography and hundreds of other courses free for 1 month. All these fantastic courses are available to you for free for 1 month, and you'll love it. So get started today with this great offer. Go to The Great Courses Plus, spell it out, P-L-U-S, .com/RHAP. Remember the plus, it's thegreatcoursesplus.com/RHAP. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sisson and I am back here podcasting after a couple days out on paternity leave, and I'm very excited to get back to Talking Survivor, talking about why Andrew Savage lost the game with the man who wrote the rules on what survivors should know before they head into a season of Survivor, specifically Survivor Cambodia. Here is the great David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good, good. Probably a little more well-rested than you are.
Yes. Yeah. I am like the Angkor tribe member of podcasting.
Well, I want to congratulate you and Nicole and welcome Anthony into the RHAP community. I look forward to seeing him and Dominic on Blood versus Water 12.
Yes. Yeah. And everybody is doing really well right now. Nicole is doing good, and Anthony is settling in, and Dominic's adjusting to having a little brother, and nobody is sleeping, and we're just gonna, you know, put our head down and try to get through it. But here we are back to talk about this. I also want to thank Josh Wiggler, who did such a superb job filling in my stead doing the exit interview with Andrew Savage, which I'm sure we will discuss here today, and then also doing the recap podcast with Marty Piombo. And if you missed those, or if you didn't know that we were doing any coverage while I was going to be away, you could check those out on robhetzelwebsite.com. Okay. So this, I think, is going to be a very interesting conversation, because typically what we do is we talk about, okay, this is the mistakes that these people made, and this is why they ended up getting the votes cast against them. But in this instance, we're talking about somebody who ended up only getting 3 votes. It was a vote split. So that, to me, is a much different dynamic than what happens when the majority of the tribe votes against you.
It is. It is. And, you know, you even mentioned last week, you said, well, how do you think Savage is playing? And we talked about it a little bit, and I do want to give myself a pat on the back here.
You did call it, right?
I called it. I got 3 predictions right. I said Joe was going to be winning immunity. Okay, you know, that one didn't take a whole lot of prediction ability.
In other news, the sky is blue.
Right, right. Savage got the boot, and the Survivor producers didn't mislead us with the commercials about a blindside.
Yes.
Didn't quite happen the way I thought it would, but, you know, I'll take it. So, you know, but you're right. In these cases where you have an immunity idol played, it is a little bit different. When people asked me right after it happened, oh, what are you going to say? My response was to post a picture of Kelly Wentworth. You know, that is why Savage lost. But, you know, if we ask Savage himself, his answer would probably be something like he told Josh Wiggler in the Parade interview. He said, it happened because I'm a dumbass who didn't split the votes.
Mm.
But, you know, it's never quite that simple. We have to examine how it ended up in a situation where Kelly needed to use the idol, knew to use the idol, and why she specifically targeted Andrew before we can figure out why Andrew lost.
Okay, well, let's jump into it. Of course, rule number one that David has always had is that a survivor must scheme and plot. Now, Andrew prided himself as being an old school survivor. Would you say that Andrew's game involved scheming and plotting?
Well, to answer that, and since he is old school, I decided to go old school and look back at my Why Andrew Lost column from the Pearl Islands. Wow. To see what happened there.
Yes.
So I'll be referencing that along the way here because I found some interesting tidbits. And the first was right here in this rule where I said that in the Pearl Islands, he did well. He had pulled together an alliance of four or five. He managed to lead his tribe without being targeted until the merge. He saw where there were people his alliance could target, and he focused in that direction. And were it not for the big twist, he would have been in an excellent position going into the merge. The four others with him almost certainly would not have turned on him. So what did he do this time? Well, he did scheme and plot in a very specific way. Like last time, he helped lead a core alliance of four or five. He tried to focus attention on people his alliance could target, but he went astray because he was unable to lead without becoming a target. And I don't think his allies would have gone to the end without trying to turn on him. So, you know, I said he schemed and plotted. Did he do enough of it? And there I'd say no. In his RHAP interview with Wiggler, he admitted as much by saying maybe he's not made to play this game because he's too loyal.
Right.
And I would agree. You need to be able to separate out real life you from survivor player you. And Savage doesn't seem able to do that most of the time.
Andrew, to me, and I was thinking about this a lot as I was driving around this morning, taking Nicole to doctor's appointments with the baby. So Andrew really was a throwback, both in the literal sense, going back to being an old school player, but just in terms of the style of play, I mean, he really was a dinosaur. And I don't mean that to be super insulting, and I realize it probably sounds that way, but I mean, he in Survivor 31 is still playing almost the Survivor Australia, Survivor Africa game. And his game, to me, does not seem any different here in Survivor 31 than it did in Survivor 7 of let me make my group of five and then let me ride this all the way to the end.
Right. And that's what I was saying. I mean, when I was looking at the stuff from Pearl Islands that I had written, a lot of it could have been written this time. And, you know, he had his core group of four or five. He was going to take them all the way. Same thing here. That was his plan. The difference, I think, is that nowadays, all the other contestants are a lot more savvy.
Mm.
So they weren't going to let him get away with that in all likelihood. But I do think he discovered a little bit more play because he admitted he was okay with going back on his promise to Spencer.
Yeah.
He admitted that it was a double standard to say that Steven was disgusting for scheming. So he did at least understand there was a game going on here. And as long as you weren't part of his core group, he was okay with throwing you to the wolves. Not the wolves with W's on their heads.
Yeah, and that might just be a little bit of nuance. Maybe it is a evolution a bit in his game, but I think that if you probably asked the Pearl Islands Andrew Savage of if you know what was Skinny Ryan and Lil and things like that about like what were they doing, was that disgusting that they were making their own plans? I'm not sure if he would necessarily say that it was, if that was all part of, you know, all fair play, not to imply anything about the guy Johnny Fairplay that he played with, but I did think he was at least a pretty good sport about all that in the exit interviews that I read. And the one he did with Josh.
Yeah, yeah, he was. And I even think I saw him tweet that he is a friend of Steven's now.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they are best bros. They are regular brochachos.
What's up, brochacho?
Maybe Steven will get to go hang out in the mansion with the Playboys and all of that. You
know? Maybe one day. Maybe one day. So the Andrew thing is just really interesting to me because I don't know if he was, if there was ever a new player that would ever come in and play that same sort of game that Andrew Savage has. I wonder if this could be the last time in Survivor history that we see somebody play this strategy.
I think it's the last time we'll see anyone play it and get this far. I think that there will still be some who will try it, but they won't last this long.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It depends on whether or not you see the Survivor format as the standard default as two tribes or three tribes. But would there ever be a new player to come in and sort of in the two tribe format say, okay, this is my five, this is good, this is it, let's not make any changes along the way? Like, will anybody be doing that again?
Well, right. And he said in one of his interviews that he had a final four locked up and loaded in his mind. It was himself, Jeremy, Joe, and Tasha. He wanted to be up against the best of the best and let the best person win. But the problem is, to accomplish that, he needed to ensure that the others felt the same way. And we know at least one of them didn't. So that's what I meant earlier when I said I didn't think his allies would have gone to the end without turning on him, because Jeremy was one of his final four allies, but they weren't in lockstep. Because someone asked Jeremy on Twitter if he would have rather lost Andrew or Steven in that vote. And Jeremy said he'd rather have lost Andrew. So that tells me where Jeremy's head is at. And Jeremy's head was not going final four with Andrew.
Yeah.
So speaking of the vote, we might as well bring up the elephant in the tribe. And Survivor historian Jordan Kalish, or is it Kalish, asked me...
This Week in Survivor History researcher.
Yes, yes.
Survivor historians, I believe, is already trademarked.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, well, I didn't know you could trademark two words like that. But.
Yes.
Okay. This Week in Survivor History, Jordan Kalish, asked me the night Survivor aired whether the blunder of not splitting the votes falls into the area of failing to scheme and plot. And Andrew admitted in his Josh Wigler RHAP interview that it was a, quote, colossal blunder to not split the votes and try to send a message of unity by everyone casting their votes against Kelly. Jeremy confirmed to me on Twitter that it was, in fact, discussed. So it's not like it didn't occur to them. They talked about it. They just didn't end up doing it. So that brings up the question of why. It's been brought up in various places by now. So there's, you know, some discussions out there, including in Andrew's interviews and Steven's blog. So let's try to pull it all together. Andrew said in multiple interviews that it's exhausting to figure out how to split the votes because it can work against you if a couple of votes go astray. Steven noted that those votes going astray would likely have been targeted at him. He was suggesting if they had split the votes, that Joe and Keith could have switched sides to go after Steven, along with the three amigas. So obviously, Steven is not going to push for something that can put himself at risk, especially when it's very unlikely that there's actually an idol out there. So why risk it for a small chance of something going wrong? On top of that, as Steven pointed out, even if they do have an idol, by some miracle, he didn't think he was going to be the one targeted. So there's no benefit for him to push for a vote split. When he mentioned in his blog that it was Joe and Keith, frankly, it never occurred to me that Keith could have been a factor in such a thing. I suspect that's because I forget Keith in general when it comes to strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he could have followed Joe over there.
Sure.
But it comes down to the fact that nobody thought any of the three amigas had an idol. In fact, they were certain of it.
Yeah.
Which we can tell by the looks on their faces when Kelly played it.
Well, let me just ask you a question going back to this, because going back to last week's episode where Spencer wasn't one of the people that was voting for Tasha, so it would have been impossible for Cass to get him to flip. Was there no scenario where they could have figured out a way to split the votes where Joe and Keith weren't part of the five person thing? So basically, if you figure it out which way to do it, since you are already exhausting yourselves doing that, could you have come up with a scenario where Joe and Keith were in the four person part of the vote split? So even in the nuclear scenario where Joe and Keith ultimately flip to the other side, it would still force a 5-5 tie, and then you could flush out the idol and then expose Joe and Keith as a rat. Wouldn't that be to Steven's benefit to have that happen, where everybody could see that Steven is indeed correct? Joe is a menace that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, I guess that does make sense. I hadn't thought of it exactly that way. And I suspect that, you know, from what we've heard, they were just tired of dealing with it and didn't think it was necessary. You know, they said a couple of them had said they spent hours on figuring out the vote split for the previous vote. And several of them, including Savage himself, they just weren't up to it. Especially, you know, Savage said, you know, he had a poisonous spider bite and he was recovering from that or suffering from that. Jeremy, I think, had said something on Twitter like he had pushed for it the first time. He wasn't going to do it again. There was clearly some resistance to it. And if I'm Steven and there's resistance to it, and, you know, he already knows that people are talking about him. So why push even harder?
Mm-hmm.
Why put your name out there even more forcefully when there's really no risk to him in this situation?
Yeah. Steven would know better than me in terms of something like this, where I would really lean on him if we were doing the know-it-alls, because I didn't play in a hidden immunity idol era. So I really have no idea. The thing that I think about with it is, who's really the person who's driving the bus on that conversation? And does that person sort of make themselves a target in being in that group of nine? It's not a group of, you know, three or four or five or six. It's a group of nine. Who's sitting there and saying, okay, all right, Kelly Wigglesworth, you vote this way. Joe, you vote this way. Keith, you vote this way. You vote this way. And it's like, who are you? Why are you the person who's deciding where I'm voting?
Well, and that's what I got out of Jeremy's tweet, was he said, you know, let someone else do it this time. And no one else wanted to do it. So he wasn't going to push it. Steven wasn't going to push it. And I think it just comes down to, it was a lot of work for what they saw as no reason.
Yeah. You know,
they were sure that if one of them had the idol, they would have played it the previous time.
Mm-hmm.
So why bother?
Yeah. And I think that Kelly did a really good job of selling that Terry Dietz probably left the game with the Takeo idol.
Right, right. Everyone had determined that there's no way that they had it. Nobody had seen her looking for one. She covered her tracks well when she was looking, as opposed to Savage said Steven had done, where he had gone off to gather firewood, apparently, and came back with two sticks, making it clear to Savage that he was really idol hunting. I think the possibility is one of the sticks got the better of Steven. But, you know, whereas we saw Kelly was preparing, you know, when she said she was going out to get firewood, she really did get firewood. She also got an idol.
Yeah. Or at least a clue.
Right. You're right. You know, Steven also said Kelly did a good acting job. She was sitting alone. She was looking dejected. The only one hint that he admits he missed was when she helped clean the rice that, in theory, she was never going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, none of them suspected there was an idol in play. And again, only one person had to worry about it if there was. And that person wasn't worried about it. So there was just no reason for most of them to push for a split. From an overall perspective, I would say that not splitting the vote really didn't amount to a failure in the first rule for Andrew. He had other issues that we already covered, but we can't expect players to be omniscient.
Okay. So rule number two is, don't scheme and plot too much. That obviously does not come into play, since we didn't say that Andrew was too big into the scheming and the plotting the first time around, correct?
You're correct. But as we saw with Cass last week, he did fail to keep the scheming secret. Everybody knew where he stood, to the point that it was driving Sierra crazy how no one outside the core group would turn on that group in the time frame she wanted. Jeff Probst in Entertainment Weekly said, it's a testament to how much a part of the tapestry he was that they targeted him as the one who would do the most damage. That sounds very poetic, almost like something Steven would say.
Yes. Yes.
Now, I'm not really sure that's 100% true, as there were other reasons for targeting him that we'll be discussing. But Probst is correct that it was easy to know Savage was 100% with that group, and the three Amigas had no chance of breaking him away.
Yeah. You know, he really did remind me in some ways of, in my own season, of, you know, the way that Roger was coming into the merge, where it was just like, okay, he had his group. If you weren't in his group, he was going to ultimately, you know, not take you with him. And the other people, the women, also knew that they weren't going to ever work with him. And so it was somebody who, around that same point in the game, I believe is also day 21, that he ends up going out into the game. And I think that there's some similarity there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we'll get to more of that in a second. But I did want to bring up one other thing that applies to keeping your scheming secret that wasn't something Andrew did wrong, but it was something that someone else did wrong in their alliance. And that is, you should never alert anyone to the fact that they are the target. And Joe blew this one. Savage paid the price.
Yeah.
You know, on the show, we saw Joe sort of tipping the ladies off while they were on the beach, but he didn't outright say which of them would be the target. So during the show, I wondered aloud on Twitter how Kelly knew that she was the target. And my request was immediately answered when Sierra replied that she told Kelly after Joe told her.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get the feeling he was telling her as part of some master plan or strategy, because he had no idea that Kelly had an idol. Sierra had no idea. Nobody had any idea. He was just trying to be nice because he considered them friends and allies, and maybe he wanted, you know, some love from them on the jury at some point, potentially. But that's exactly the point of this rule, is don't do it. I mean, this goes back to your season. Someone comes up to you and says, hey, you know, I'm going to be voting you out. What did you do?
Well, going to go and round up a posse. Yeah. I do think you're onto something here. I think that there's a bit of a hole in Joe's game here on this front. I think that maybe Joe might be a little too trusting of some of the other people, where he feels like, you know, he wants to be a good guy and tell Sierra what's going on, so she wants to keep on working with him. And Sierra then has no problem of then telling Kelly Wentworth that it's her, and then ultimately creates this whole big domino effect of bad things that happen to Joe's alliance because Joe is trying to be a good guy.
Right, right. Now, what'll be really interesting is to see what happens from here on out, because Jeremy posted on Twitter that he thought it was Keith who spilled the beans.
Hmm.
So I do wonder what will happen, you know, as we go forward there, if that will actually play any role.
Yeah, interesting. All right, so rule number three is be flexible.
Right, and this comes to what you were just talking about, you know, with both Andrew and Roger, which is you can't just tie yourself to one alliance and hope that it survives. But that's exactly what he did. The three amigas knew that Stephen, among others, was open to working with them, but Savage was dead set on playing what he considered to be an old school game.
Mm-hmm.
He was locked in. He refused to even consider working with certain people, and he didn't even try to hide it. Again, Jordan Kalish pointed out that this harkens back to his first season, when he was never shy about alienating people he didn't like. And I think it takes us back to a different kind of inflexibility he showed in Pearl Islands as well, which was his inability to go with the flow of the game and instead just lock into the way he thought the game should go.
Yeah.
So as I said at the time, he didn't want any outcasts back, and he made it obvious. This time, he didn't want those he considered undeserving to move forward. And again, he made it obvious. He even claimed in one interview that he and his crew were playing the game better than Sierra was, because they were on the top and she was on the bottom. And he went so far as to say that she and Abby Maria didn't really deserve to be there at this point.
Yeah. And I talked about this last week on the show, is that I went back to the BR rules of the thing that Boston Rob was able to really perfect in the season that he won, was where, and also that he did this well in Survivor All-Stars too, that he has an alliance with the people at the bottom of the tribe too, not just the top three, but he has a top three with this group, a top three with this group, and everybody sort of thinks they're going to the end, and that sort of prevents the mutiny. And while we didn't see a mutiny ultimately take down Andrew Savage, it's not unfathomable to think that that was too far off in the distance, where if a Steven and a Kimmy ultimately decide, well, we're not really part of the inner circle here, like Cass and Sierra ultimately did a couple of weeks ago. And so you could see people who were at the bottom of the original buy-on try to band together with some of the Takeo people. And to go back to Stealth R Us, like, I really did feel like there was a similarity between what Andrew was doing here and, again, Philip back in Survivor Karamoan.
Right. He had his group and he didn't care who knew about it.
Right.
And, he, you know, like I said, he even made fun of Sierra for saying, people, play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because in his mind, this was the game.
Right. And just like Brandon Hance with Philip, where Philip told him, hey, you're not part of Stealth R Us. You know, you're middle management. You're not somebody who's making the decisions around here. I think the people who were in the bottom of that group clearly knew they were in the bottom of that group. And you never want to telegraph that sort of information to people who could defect against you, especially in a merge as big as this one.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. Did Andrew let emotions control him?
Well, I mean, it's hard to get an exact read on how Andrew did in terms of controlling his emotions versus letting them control him. You know, it brings up the question again, is loyalty an emotion? If so, then yes, he let that control him. But I don't necessarily look at it that way. But there were other emotional words that he's used, like disgusting. Okay, he used that deeply emotional word to describe scheming that he didn't like. So I would say he didn't really let his emotions control him, but rather, to avoid cognitive dissonance, his emotions mirrored what the more strategic part of his brain was telling him.
Mm-hmm.
If he wanted to go to the end with someone, then that was the right thing to do. If not, then they were obviously undeserving, disgusting, whatever else you want to say. But overall, I'll give him a pass here.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that Andrew was an overly emotional player. I think that there might have been some things, as you keyed in on, where he let his emotional feelings about somebody sort of make him make a not great decision. I think the one from this week's episode was when he heard Steven talking about we need to get rid of Joe. He doesn't love Steven. And then he goes directly to Joe and tells Joe what's going on. And maybe that leads to Joe then trying to have this meeting with the women where he feels close to them. And again, there's this chain reaction, which ultimately ends in Andrew going home. And maybe part of that is that emotional, oh, Steven's doing this. That's disgusting. I got to tell Joe about this, when it probably would have been better off to sit on that information.
Right, right. And that somewhat links into the next rule, which is where I can't give him a pass. That, of course, is playing the social game and pretending to be nice.
Yes.
Because, you know, he matched his emotions to his strategy most of the time, but he was allowing people to see what those emotions actually were. And again, we have to go back to Pearl Islands. He had the same problem with Skinny Ryan and Lil both telling me in interviews at the time that Andrew never really accepted them from the beginning and therefore alienated them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when Lil came back, it was even worse, as he made it obvious that he didn't want her there and felt she didn't have the right to be there. Similarly, this time, he made it pretty clear he didn't want the three amigas around, and he felt that at least Sierra and Abby Maria were undeserving.
Yeah.
Overall, I would say he still didn't understand how to play the social game. He said in his Wiggler interview that he turned into a wimpy little non-leader too late, after a lot of damage was already done, such as with Sierra.
Wimpy little non-leader.
You know, and I agree, he burned that bridge with Sierra, and there is nothing he could do to get that back. I have to admit, it's not clear to me why Abby Maria hates him so much at this point, but it did lead to a very amusing end of Tribal Council, so I'm okay with that. He did admit in his 10 Things We Should Know on CBS.com that if he could do anything differently, he wouldn't have offered up Sierra's name as a decoy.
Mm-hmm.
To quote him, I was a dummy for doing that. So him calling himself a dummy, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
He admits now that it was insensitive and understands that Sierra hated him for doing it, but he just came upon that realization too late. Earlier, we discussed Jeff Probst's opinion that the three amigas voted out Savage because he was central to the strategy of the group. But I have to say his attitude, his ego, his self-righteousness, all of that had to play a huge role as well.
Yeah. So do you feel like they voted for him because they saw him as the leader, or do you feel like they voted for him because they really just wanted to stick it to him?
I think it was a combination, and part of it moves on to the next rule.
Okay. That is rule 6. Don't be too much of a threat.
Right. You know, as we look back at Pearl Islands, he made himself a threat there by taking on a leadership role within his alliance. In answer to the question you just asked, I'd say he did it again.
Mm-hmm.
He, again, admitted turning into a wimpy little non-leader too late.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the only reason he was a threat. He was one of the main people pushing to get rid of those he considered unworthy, and none of them believed they could ever work with him moving forward, as we discussed. That makes him the worst kind of threat to their progress in the game. So it was a combination of his leadership role, his attitude, and just that he was a threat to them. All those things helped to combine.
Yeah. He was a cohesive force of buy on strong, buy on strong, buy on strong. So if you're any of these people that are at the bottom, now this gives sort of a window into an opportunity to try to take some of these pieces that Andrew is sort of like beating the drum of, hey, this is the group. Anybody who goes against the family, they're done. That's disgusting. And so now this really could be a much more wide open game moving forward here from Final 11 on.
Oh, I agree. I agree. But, you know, before we get to that prediction, we have a couple more rules left.
Okay. Number 7 is vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. We're back to the strong now, right?
We are back to the strong. As a matter of fact, everybody who voted was targeting a strong player, just in different ways. So some of the 9 whose votes didn't count went after Kelly because Jeremy said in a bonus scene that while they couldn't take out Joe, they could at least take out one of his lieutenants. So apparently it's Lieutenant Wentworth. Jeremy also made the case that Kelly was a bigger threat to win immunity than either Sierra or Abby Maria. And I would say that's probably the main reason he and Steven gave to to the rest of the tribe, because obviously they couldn't use the real reason, which was that she was close to Joe. And then the three people who cast votes that actually counted, they aimed for one of the strong as well. Now, maybe he wasn't the strongest physically, as Savage himself expected Jeremy to be the target once the immunity idol was played. But as we've discussed, he was definitely the strongest threat to their game.
Yeah. Going back to that immunity idol play and where Savage expected it to be Jeremy, did you find it surprising that Jeremy didn't play his idol? That I heard Josh and Marty talking about this in their interview, and it was something that sort of escaped me thinking about it at the Know-It-Alls, but shouldn't Jeremy have played his idol at that point?
That is probably the most frequently asked question of Jeremy on Twitter, and he has shown amazing patience by responding to every person who has asked him that.
What does he say?
He basically says he considered it for a minute. He doesn't really know why he didn't play it. He just didn't feel like he was in danger, like he was the target. The same time that Savage thought Jeremy was gone, Jeremy thought Savage was gone. And obviously Jeremy was right. Now, it would have been a much bigger story if they had targeted Jeremy, but I think he probably had a better feel for how the three amigas were playing and who they would go after than Savage did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Savage, they were undeserving. They can just go away. He wasn't going to be talking to them. Whereas Jeremy, I'm sure, at least interacted with them and had, you know, some feel for what was going on there.
That's just one of those Malcolm Gladwell blink moments where it's just all gut reaction in terms of somebody who knows what they're doing and doesn't know what they're doing. I always say, boy, I'd hate to go home with this in my pocket. Let me just play it and be wrong and not
right.
Go out with it. But yeah, kudos to Jeremy for, you know, for whatever reason, knowing that the way people were acting didn't coincide with them putting the votes on him.
Yeah, and it does bring up an interesting question. There would have been no votes that counted if they had, in fact, been targeting Jeremy and he had played his idol. What do you do when no votes count?
I think then you would have a revote and Savage and Kelly Wentworth would be off the table.
Right.
So
I would guess
Sierra goes home.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Okay. So then anything else from the appendices?
We can finally do something with Appendix A about the immunity idol. I would say it's fairly obvious that this was a good use of the idol, mainly because Kelly knew she was the target and she had to use it to stay in the game. Once word came down to her, she had no choice in the matter. But what made it such a good play was the utter secrecy about the fact that she even had the idol. If she had told anyone, it might not have worked. You know how word spreads. So if she maybe has told Sierra, let's say, then maybe Sierra lets it slip to Joe. Because, I mean, Joe was willing to let slip who was going home. Maybe Sierra lets slip to Joe. Oh, by the way, we have an idol. Well, then maybe Joe doesn't spill the beans, or maybe he brings word back to his larger alliance. We don't know what would have happened. It would have just been this huge mess. What we do know is by keeping it a complete secret, she was able to save herself and give us a great TV moment on top of it.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah, I never know why people are telling other people when they have the hidden immunity. I always say that I would keep it to myself. So it's very interesting to have seen both Kelly and Jeremy come into this game and find idols and not tell anybody. Because for the idol to work, I mean, there's basically like two schools of thought. There's the idols as the way it was meant to be designed of I'm going to play it and save myself from getting votes cast on me. That's when you want to have it kept a secret. If you're trying to avoid having votes cast on you in the first place, I guess you want to start telling people. But especially in a game like this one where there's so many different pieces and so many different ways that the votes could get split, you know, and there's a ample way to defend against the person who's saying, hey, I have an idol, don't vote for me. It's like, hey, we'll split the vote and then we'll get rid of you.
Right. And I know it's been used to, you know, try to form alliances. Oh, I'll just tell this one person or whatever. But just telling one person rarely works. You know, the old saying, two people can keep a secret if one of them is dead.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, hopefully we won't have any of that going on the island there. But I do think that it shows something that both of them are returning players and both of them chose to keep their mouths shut, completely shut when they found the idol. And I just think that's the best play, especially in this situation.
And interestingly, I always talk about how people come back into a returning player season with a little bit of the person that won their season. And in San Juan del Sur, the person who had the idol in John Mish at Final Six got targeted. One of the reasons why was because he had the idol and they had to keep it a secret that they were going after him. And they split the vote 2-2-2 to get him out. And then Natalie, who had an idol, didn't tell anybody she had an idol and then played it at the final five on Jacqueline. And then that was a big move that helped her ultimately win the game. And so for Jeremy and Kelly, both the San Juan del Sur people, they both come into this game with the idea to keep their idol secret.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I mean, Kelly wasn't there long enough, but she saw it on TV. It definitely left an impact on both of them, I think.
All right. So one last thing about Andrew before we get to why Andrew ultimately lost. Should Andrew have pounded the table and made sure the old Bion group got rid of Steven at that vote?
Oh.
Would that have changed his lot at all? Or would people have been saying, you know, I think we got to get rid of Andrew?
I think the problem is that you once again risk making yourself the target if you push too hard. Mm-hmm. He was strong with his allies. And among those allies was Jeremy, who was really saying, no, Steven's loyal to us. We can use him as a pawn. Do you want to risk it and create that fracture when Jeremy's telling you, don't worry about it, we can get him later? Again, it requires some amount of omniscience on Andrew's part to know that this was all going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he could have tried doing that. And obviously, the result couldn't have been any worse for him. But I just don't think that in the moment there was any reason that he would have seen to push that.
He would have to have not have been Andrew Savage. I mean, in that moment, he would have to have been Tony, where he can go ahead and make a move against somebody in his alliance, as Tony did, I believe, at Final Nine with LJ, where it was like, LJ is a threat. We need to go and get rid of him. And so he can go ahead and pick up the people like Atasha and Spencer and go ahead and Jeremiah and vote with that group. This would have to have been Andrew taking his woo, which would be Joe, and then maybe even a Keith along with him, voting with those guys, and then coming back sort of hat in hand to Jeremy and Tasha, being like, guys, before you get mad, let me just explain. I'm still with you guys. I had to get rid of Steven. Sorry, you guys didn't see it my way.
Right, and there's no way he's ever going to be like that. But somewhat ironically, he was trying to be the wimpy little non-leader and not be seen as a threat by giving in.
Wimpy little non-leader.
So he didn't want to push his vision on everyone else. It was a discussion and they said, well, let's not go with Steven this time. So, if he came back for third time's the charm, which I don't think he will, maybe he goes full gusto into that full leadership role. And says, that's it. I'm just going to boss everyone around here because last time I wanted to get rid of Steven and they wouldn't listen to me and I got voted out.
All right. So, David, what is the ultimate reason in your mind that Andrew got voted out?
Well, you know, Steven wrote in his blog that the narrative of Survivor is often hubris and overthrow, which is only something Steven could say. And, you know, the nine of them were arrogant and self-assured until Kelly pulled out the idol. What I would add is this goes double for Savage. He was locked in with his group and inflexible about changing it, and he made that all too obvious to everyone. He also made it far too obvious what he thought about people, and he couldn't bring himself to pretend to be nice or play the social game. He admitted that he is not cut out to play this game. He wants to always be in charge and tell people what to do, take a core group of four or five allies to the end, play the loyalty card. But that type of play, especially these days, is a threat to everyone else. And they're just not going to sit there and let it happen. In Survivor, just when you think you're in control, something will come along to tell you otherwise. He should have learned that in Pearl Islands, but he clearly didn't. And that is why Andrew lost.
All right, great stuff. So now here we go. I really feel like this game is blown much more open now that Andrew isn't there to sort of like, okay, keep the group together, keep the group together. This is our Bion strong group. Now that that's not a thing anymore, how do you think this unfolds this Wednesday?
Well, it looks like from the previews that everyone's out there looking for idols.
Yeah.
And it brings up an interesting point because people had been thinking that with all the idols looking different, someone who already has one might think another one is a fake. And when I say people had been thinking that, I mean those of us watching and knowing that this twist was out there. But one interesting point, Jeremy said on Twitter that when you find an idol, the enclosed rules tell you that they're all different. So that actually takes away the part of the twist that we no longer have to worry about a situation like that. So I don't think we're going to see that come up. But that's about all we saw there. I'm not really sure what else might be going on in this week's episode. So I think that far more interesting aspect will be, like you said, the fallout from tribal council. There's still a big group, but there's lots of little groups. And, you know, you have said multiple times, big moves are made at odd numbers. And I just have a feeling that that's going to happen here. I loved seeing Sierra lecture Steven about strategy. You know, maybe she's the best know-it-all. But I do think she's right. The people weren't making moves. They were voting out potential swing votes. And if it hadn't been for the idol play, they were just going along through the pecking order. Now all of that's in flux. And you've got all these different people going in different directions. So what do we know? Well, Steven said on Facebook that he and Sierra were tighter while Kelly and Joe were tighter. And that's Wentworth, of course. Even on CBS.com, it said that Sierra and Steven shared a goal of getting rid of Joe. Wentworth talked at Tribal Council about how she needed to make sure some people still trusted her. We know that Jeremy and Steven are tight, and Kimmy is tight as well. In fact, Steven even said on Twitter that Kimmy tipped him off to the discussions that occurred on the reward. So with all of this going on, does it become a Steven versus Joe face-off? I'm not sure where all the chips fall, but Steven does seem to be pretty well connected. As much as we saw how Joe wanted to target him and Savage wanted him gone, you know, you and I talked about Jeremy was able to save him and the others were willing to go along with it. At the same time, the three amigas didn't target him either, because at least a portion of them realized that they could work with him going forward. So I think that's a good sign for him.
Mm-hmm.
Sierra mentioned at Tribal Council that he may be one of the people running the game. Amusingly, Steven mentioned on Twitter that when she said it was either Steven or Joe, he looked at Joe and said, "I hope it's me." So I wish we had seen that.
The great Steven line.
Yes. You know, and Steven did have a great blindside face when Kelly pulled out the idol, but I do think this helps him in the long run.
Oh, certainly.
You know, even though he controlled nothing tonight, he was in a position where both sides decided he was worth keeping around.
Yeah.
So let's look further forward. Let's play the edit game.
Well, can I just add one thing in there? Also, Steven needs to drop the Joe thing here. Like, if Joe wants to try to mount forces against Steven, I think that Joe will only hang himself doing that. I don't think that that is Joe's game. If you get Joe to start playing a game that is not him, I think then ultimately that's probably a better look for Steven, because it'll be easier to out Joe as sort of this rat who can't be trusted and will make people only want to get rid of Joe more, I think, if people from the original buy-on see that. But if Steven is going to now, you know, beat the drum of, okay, now this is our chance to get rid of Joe, I feel like that he could only make himself into a bigger target or a bigger threat among people who in some ways have sort of forgotten about him. I mean, I think it's almost a minor miracle that Steven is still in the game at the final 11. I mean, Steven is such a great strategic thinker. I think that so many people have been blinded to that, or at least have sort of been paralyzed to do anything against him to this point. So I think by himself sort of revealing, aha, here's who I really am, and then starting to really scheme and plot against Joe even harder, I think that would be a mistake on his part.
Yeah, I do think you're right. And of course, you know, he may have only said it four times and they just decided to show us those four times. I do think he would be wise to wait until Joe loses immunity.
Right.
You know, there's no point in bringing it up every day if Joe's just going to win immunity anyway.
Just like with Tyson in Token Jeans, where it was like Tyson lost immunity. And it was like, hey, why don't we get rid of Tyson today? That's a great idea.
Right. So looking all the way forward, I do see big things for Steven. And in fact, I'm beginning to think we're seeing a Steven second place edit with Jeremy winning.
I've seen that before.
Yes, yes. Because now, what have we seen of Steven? Well, okay, we saw some Dodo-y stuff early. And then we saw him talking and crying about how can't make the same mistake as last time and let the golden boy make it to the end. But he's working with Jeremy in such a way that Jeremy could be the one who's the golden boy. He could be the new JT, and Steven isn't seeing it. He's so focused on Joe as the golden boy. I'm thinking all of this could come together to be showing us a Steven who ends up in the exact same place he was the first time around.
See, I disagree. I don't think that Steven will end up going down the same way he does. Like, I think that it would be fine if that was ultimately how it played out. But I think that Steven will make a move against Jeremy before it gets to that point. I don't think that you see Steven ultimately get there and say like, how did I do this? Oh my God, I can't believe I'm in the same exact position I am at. Again. Like, I think that he will try to get Jeremy out before it gets down to that point.
Well, he might, but there's a lot of golden boys out there.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the fact that they kept showing that is going to come back somehow. That's the feel that I have for it now. I mean, I know how well, you know, making these predictions based on the edit generally go. But I do think he's going to be around for the long haul. And I think that means something has to give in the battle against Joe. So it either means that he drops it and lets things lie, or does it mean that this week Joe doesn't win immunity and gets voted out? The way I see the votes lining up is Steven, Jeremy, Kimmy, Tasha, and Spencer on one side, Joe, Wentworth, and Keith on the other side. But I don't know where Sierra and Abby line up, since they're allies with Wentworth, but Sierra seems to agree with wanting Joe out.
Mm.
I don't know where Wigglesworth would be, because I'm not sure she's even still on the season. But if I have to make a prediction, I'm going to put my money on Joe losing and being voted out.
Joe, okay. You're going for the big shot 2 weeks in a row.
I'm going for broke.
Okay. I am going to shorten up my swing, and I'm going to say that we go right back with the master plan, going back to with the three amigos, just like Malcolm was able to pull out idols and win immunity and get Philip voted out, and then Malcolm gets voted out the next week. So I'll say that either Sierra or Kelly ultimately gets voted out this week, and maybe you have the whole hand on the hot stove. Wentworth had the idol last time. I'll go back to Sierra getting voted out this week.
Yeah, that's certainly a more reasonable prediction than mine, but I'm going to swing for the fences.
You're getting cocky now. You called Andrew, and now you're feeling that, again, just like Steven said, this is a case of hubris and turnover, and that's ultimately where we are right now.
Imagine how hubric I will be if I get it again this time.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Hubris and upheaval once again. All right. So is that the hashtag?
I think it has to be.
Okay. So there you go. David, so great to be back podcasting, and especially with you talking about a very interesting week in Survivor Cambodia.
Well, and good to have you back. You know, I didn't know what to listen to with you gone for those 2 days.
All right. Well, very fun stuff. Of course, David and I will talk about all this again 1 week from now, while we talk about why the latest player got voted out. And after they do get voted out, Josh Wiggler and I will be back together to recap it on Survivor Know-It-All. So very much looking forward to that. Of course, you could follow David on Twitter. He is at David Bloomberg. And then, of course, I also want to give one more shout out about my paternity leave to the great Scott St. Pierre, who really kept all of the podcast trains running in my absence. So again, thank you so much to Scott for keeping all the podcasts coming while I was able to take a couple days off. There you go. All right. David, thank you again so much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. And again, welcome back.
All right. And thanks everybody who listened. We do appreciate it. If you're starting to look ahead to doing any sort of holiday shopping, we always appreciate when you use our links for Amazon.com. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments on robswebsite.com. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.